This morning it's Silly Putty. You're listening to Mark and the Escorts, Silly Putty, and welcome to the Steve Probst 45 show. Out of the studios of WPMD, Cerritos College, Novak, California, it's a 45 show. A special today. This is a one-of-a-kind program. Mark Guerrero, son of the guy that invented, that put Latin rock together. There was no Latin rock before Lalo Guerrero put those two elements together. And I think there's a lot of Latin rock heritage being celebrated these days. Well, I got the real deal here. Mark Guerrero, son of the late Lalo Guerrero, is here and is going to share all sorts of sounds and memories and the East LA scene and Silly Putty, too. Okay, that's Mark and the Escorts, and the name of the tune is Silly Putty, and I'm going to get my microphone placement going here, and welcome to the show, Mark Guerrero.
Come on in. Is this on?
We're finding out the hard way. It absolutely is.
Oh, good.
You can hear yourself, can't you?
I can, yes.
Okay. That's the first clue. Hey, welcome to the show, and I've been looking forward to this for some time. Of course, we've been in touch for, what, going on 2 months now
about
doing this, and I appreciate you coming in all the way from Palm Springs to help out with this overview of this. This is like Latino Music Month or...
Hispanic Heritage Month.
Okay, yeah, that's what I said. Hispanic Heritage Month. So this is right on target, huh?
Right on. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because as much as anybody, your father was involved in creating a whole genre of music. Of course, he didn't know it at the time. He didn't wake up one day and say, "We're going to create a whole genre of music."
That's what was so great about him is that he didn't. He just did what he did, and there was no plan or nothing was contrived. He just kind of naturally did what he did.
Yeah, and Why hadn't someone done it before him? I mean, what was stopping some other...
Talent.
Okay. Those... obviously, those six letters, talent.
Talent.
Okay. Did he see that, you know, I mean, the music wasn't reaching the larger population? Was that part of it, or...
No, as a matter of fact, he kind of backed into it because he grew up, was born and raised in Tucson, Arizona, and he... he loved people like Al Jolson and, you know, Rudy Valley and various, you know, I don't know about Rudy Valley, I take that back, but Al Jolson and, you know, Bing Crosby later and then Sinatra. And, you know, he wanted to sing in English, too. He was an American. But because he was so Latino, so Mexican-looking and Indian-looking, he never got the opportunity. He had to get into the Spanish field. He loved it, but he had to just strictly do that because he couldn't get a deal singing in English.
Maybe he wanted to put swing into Spanish language music.
Well, that's one of the things he wanted to do, but he also could do beautiful ballads and whatever else.
But let's stick with the career of Mark and the Escorts for a second. Now, we heard Silly Putty, and I see the name Cardenas. Is that Billy Cardenas?
Yes.
Co-wrote that. How did he come up with titles like Silly Putty?
You know, he's the one that came up with the titles. You know, I was only like, you know, 14, 15 years old, and we wrote the songs, those instrumentals, but Billy gave us the titles, and they were very cool. Silly Putty, Tough Stuff.
Yeah, that's a tough title. Was this your first recording activity?
Well, actually, my dad took us into the studio a few times, into his studio he used to record in Pasadena, and we did a few... couple of demos, you know, and then we also backed my dad on a few cuts way back, Mark and the Escorts, back in 64, 65. So that was our first recording experience. But these were the first I'd ever done on my own with my band Mark and the Escorts.
Now, where did you go to high school?
Garfield High School, East L.A.
Okay. And obviously you were still in high school when this band was put together?
Probably junior high.
Junior high. Yeah, did this make a difference as far as your status on the campus of people?
Definitely, yeah.
Or were there a lot of other teenagers doing the same thing? Were there a lot of other bands?
Yes, there were, and that's what was so amazing. It was an explosion of bands. It was one of those special things.
Who was your competition at Garfield?
I would say the main one was a group called the Exotics.
Uh-huh.
And man, we were like really bitter rivals, but you know, we've talked lately. And it was a good rivalry because we drove each other to get better. We'd hear them do something, and we'd learn it. They'd hear us do something. They'd go, what are we going to do now? And they'd do something else. And they, by the way, they turned out remnants of that band. There were two guys, two Delgado brothers in that band.
Okay.
They went on. One of those guys from the Exotics, Bobby Delgado, and his younger brothers, Steve and Joey, to this day have a great band called the Delgado Brothers. Really great.
Were they with the Ambertones in between? I know that
Eddie Delgado, their older brother, was the bass player for the Ambertones.
Okay, so they were younger brothers of
Eddie.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I know the Delgados. They were very active in the 80s and 90s as a blues band.
Oh
in
yeah,
this area.
And they still are. They got a new CD out that's really great.
I thought one of them moved to Hawaii, maybe.
Yeah, there's Danny's in Hawaii. Eddie was in Hawaii for a long time. Now he's in Nashville.
Oh,
Hawaii to Nashville.
So the Exotics never recorded.
No, that's one of the problems. They never recorded, so that's why they've kind of been lost in the shuffle in this history.
Now you try to. You were saying you'd compete for material or try to find material. What sort of material would you? Bring in, what kind of material would they bring in?
Well, you know, they, I would say besides doing the usual, some of the usual East LA kind of stuff that most bands were doing, their emphasis was sort of the hard-edged British Invasion, Kinks, you know, hard-edged stuff.
And you?
And we were one of the few bands that did a lot of Beatles. You know, we also did Kinks and Animals, but we...
But the British Invasion really hit the teenage Garfield scene pretty hard, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Like everywhere else.
Yeah.
Now, you recorded this for Eddie Davis.
Actually, let's see. I don't know. It was not. It was Eddie was around, but it was Billy Cardenas. And Billy, most of his groups recorded for Eddie's labels, Rampart, right. Pharaoh, Linda. But we were actually on GMP Crescendo Records, so this was a separate deal.
Oh, so he made a deal outside of Eddie.
Yeah, he went on the side, and yeah.
Oh, I got you. Okay, so how'd you run into Billy?
It's just he was the manager at the time. He managed the Premieres, the Blendells, and I forgot where we met him, but he liked us. We were like the youngest band. We were, you know, most of those bands were 16, 17, 18 years old. We were 14, 15. And he liked us, and he started booking us with all the other bands.
Yeah, I get the feeling Eddie was everywhere at the time. I mean, Billy was everywhere at the
time. Yeah, he was. He had his bunch of bands. He was managing.
Okay, so let's check out another Mark and the Escorts, and then we're going to get to some of your dad's early stuff.
All right.
Brand new dance, and I like to do it just Cuando andaba yo paseando por la calle, men, me encontré con un chainero que me dijo, ven, date shine conmigo y no te va a pesar, 10 centavos te va a costar. Y así se puso atrás y tras el bolerito de la men. Nomás cogió su trapo y empezó a tocar un ritmo boogie boogie sin perder compás. La gente le hizo rueda y empezó a brincar, se toca un ritmo a todo tren. Hoy como truena con su trapo el bolerito de la men. Cada vez que le unta grasa, el trapo truena y truena pa. Da gusto oírlo hacerle así con su ha. Cuando él termina con su eterno triquitra, me deja los zapatos como nuevos ya. Me voy contento ya con ganas de bailar con su ritmo piqueteador. Le pega el boogie boogie duro, el bolerito de la men. Da gusto oírlo hacerle así con su jabere, 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 ja. Cuando él termina con su eterno triquitra, me deja los zapatos como nuevos ya. Me voy contento ya con ganas de bailar con su ritmo piqueteador. Le pega el boogie boogie duro, el bolerito de la men. El bolerito de la men.
Oh man, there's so many elements to that. I hear a little bit of Rock Around the Clock, well before Rock Around the Clock ever happened.
True.
You know, who would think that elements like tap dancing and an accordion break. And
I never thought about that accordion. What the heck was the accordion doing there?
And a cool guitar break and a whole swing presence would work. But I mean,
I got a great story too about that. My dad told me the story that thing that sounds like tap dancing was actually his drummer Frank Quijada playing his thighs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And they had to do quite a few takes, and they said, and he did it with bare legs. So his legs were all red, and he was in pain, and he had to keep doing it, and he was, like, all red at the end. And
oh, man.
Yeah.
But anything for the music.
Yeah, that's right. He was in his underwear for the music.
Well, I'm not going to go that far, but I do appreciate it. You know, percussion's a weird thing. Like a song like Alley-Oop, that was done by crashing two wine bottles together. Oh, you know, Sandy Nelson had finished off the contents and then was, you know,
sure.
They had a regular drummer, but what sounds like clanging sounds was wine. You know, I mean, percussion.
Oh, yep.
Where's your next percussion idea going to come from? Well, that was totally unique. Who was his accordionist? You know,
I don't know who that was, and he probably would have forgotten also.
Now, what instruments did your dad specialize in? Because I know that he was talented in more than one instrument.
Well, actually, really, guitar was really the only instrument.
So did he do the guitar break on that, do you think?
Oh, heck no. He was never a lead guitarist. He was a great, rhythm guitarist, and he could accompany himself in many styles, but he was never a lead guitarist. No.
Okay, so who would have been the guitar guy on that?
Well, I'm guessing, just by the sound of it, because my dad did tell me stories of some of the things he did in the early 50s. He actually went with his producer down to South Central, and it was a black group in a garage or something like that. Song "Tin Marín de Dopingue" he did was done with a black group, and so I would bet that this was a black group from South Central.
So there's two choices there: it'd either be Ted Brinson's garage where he played bass and backed up songs like "Earth Angel,"
could be. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Austin McCoy's garage on Avalon. Just north of Compton. Could have been one of the two.
Wow, that's pretty.
Yeah, well, hey. Yeah,
that's good.
Some people can tell the Austin McCoy sessions because there's a certain squeak.
Wow.
I mean, that's a set of ears. And then, of course, the world-famous lyrics that predicted a whole genre that's popular now, Hippity Hop.
Oh, yeah, right, right. Like that's that. Right. The other thing I wanted to mention, that I believe that song was based on Chattanooga Shoeshine Boy. Mm-hmm. And this song is called Boleritos de la Main, which means Main Street Shoeshine Boy. So all that hippity hippity hop, all that was like him shining the shoes.
Okay, now, what was the presidential award your father won, was given?
He got the National Medal of Arts. I think it was 1997, mm-hmm. And my brother and I went with him to Washington D.C. and went to the White House with him. It was an amazing.
So it was President Clinton.
Clinton, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, come on, how many people get that?
Exactly.
And I'm sure there was an all-star company there too.
Oh yeah, Lionel Hampton, Edward Albee.
Oh man,
Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah, just the creme de la creme.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I mean, your father was the godfather of the whole scene, and I'm sure lots of musicians came to him to have him work with them, right? Or
you mean back in the old days?
Yeah,
the Chicano thing. You know, unfortunately, you know, his talent deserved to be internationally known and mainstream, but really, he was sort of confined to the Latin American Chicano thing, and it was a bit frustrating for him.
And probably Southern California and Tucson area, where I'm sure he's well known, and in Mexico too.
Oh yeah, and around the Southwest, and you know.
Yeah, but it was a regional and genre limited.
Yeah.
And I still want to thank you, because it was my great opportunity. I don't know how many years before he passed away that he came on my cable show to promote his book. How'd the book do, by the way?
It's still in print and still out there, so it's selling pretty steadily.
And the title is?
Lalo, My Life in Music.
And you were kind enough to fight the traffic from Palm Springs at midday and come and bring him in. And
that's
it was,
right.
There was a tremendous point in my career of interviewing people to get someone of his stature, and just nicest guy.
Do you still have that on tape somewhere?
You know,
I was thinking,
where is it?
Oh my God!
You know, because the cable system has undergone some changes. The producer kept the tapes, uh-huh. But you know, I mean, I'll find out if I still have that on tape, or even I'm sure he put it on tape. But where the tape is a good question.
It was videotape. It was television too.
Yeah, it was TV.
Cable.
And he was just like, you know, just talking to. He knew what he did. I mean, he knew what he had accomplished, but he.
Totally, humble guy. You know, no airs about him whatsoever.
So, was he a fan of Louis Jordan and and those?
Yeah,
did you hear that? Well, of course, you weren't around yet, but were you hearing R&B in your house and all sorts of different?
No, actually, I wasn't. By the time I was a kid, by the time I was around, but he's told me that way back when he was a kid in the 30s and 40s, you know, he liked like T-Bone Walker, and he'd listen to Louis Jordan, and he liked a lot of the black artists and the bluesy stuff, and he used to go down to a club in Tucson, I think it was called the Beehive, and he would just sit outside and listen to these guys from outside because he was a kid.
So some of these major R&B and blues acts would pass through Tucson and play there?
Yeah.
Okay, now, if we got it right, and there's some variables here, but this is based, I think, on Louis Jordan's Saturday Night Fish Fry. And the title is La Tamalada.
La Tamalada.
As in
the tamale party.
Yeah, okay.
Tamale fest.
So was there such a thing? Was that the...
Oh, yeah. It's a, you know, it's a Christmas tradition to have a tamalada.
Oh, yeah, I know that, but it's not like a house rent party that Saturday Night Fish Fry is based on. It's
no.
More of a, yeah, okay.
Saber lo que es gozar, nomás se vienen conmigo a vacilar, nomás se portan bien y los voy a invitar a una tamalada de vecindad. No tienen que hacer más que llegar, tocar la puerta y va a contestar una pachucona que va a gritar. Lleguen que la tamalada va a empezar, la tamalada. La tamalada no se acaba ni por nada hasta el amanecer. La tamalada.
hicimos ni más, más que llegar. Y luego la vitrola empezó a tocar. Escogimos las chamacas más bonitas y sas. Empezamos a darle al jitterbug. La aventé pa' allá y la aventaba pa' acá. Y ella me seguía sin perder compás. Y la música toque y toque sin parar. Las cosas empezaron a calentar. La tamalala, la tamalala. Bailando sin descansar, a esta linda niña empecé a besar. En eso llega el novio y me empieza a echar. Me dijo cosas feas de mi mamá. De allí se armó el relajo y empezó a volar. Patadas, botellas y hasta un comal. Y yo que soy macho y no me sé rajar, me dieron en la trompa con un tamal. La tamalada, la tamalada, la tamalada no se acaba ni por nada. Ya en paz, sirvieron los tamales calientitos ya, sus frijoles refritos y no sé qué más, sin faltar sus respectivas tortillas. La tamalada, la tamalada, la tamalada no se acaba ni por nada hasta el amanecer. La tamalada, la tamalada, la tamalada no se acaba ni por nada hasta el amanecer.
There's that accordion again, La Tamalada, Spanish language version of Saturday Night Fish Fry. You can tell he was a fan. Now, your father's first recording activity was for Bluebird Records, was it?
Vocalion.
Vocalion, about 39, yeah, 40, around
39.
There. And you've heard those songs.
Yes.
Are they more traditional Spanish?
Oh, yeah, it was sort of a, you know, Spanish. It was all in Spanish. A quartet. I think it was a quartet.
Mm-hmm. And then he had Trio Imperial.
Los Carlistas was the name of the group.
Oh, okay.
And they, you know, frankly, I haven't heard all those. He did, I don't know, 8 or 10 sides, and I've only heard 2.
So it was none of those were under his name. They were all under the name of the
Los Carlistas. Yeah.
And what's the content of those?
One of them, I've only heard 2. One of them is a very sort of traditional Mexican quartet thing, but the other one, it's really bizarre. He's singing like, he's crooning, and it sounds like it would be a song in English, but it just happens to be in Spanish.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds very 1930s style, you know, but in Spanish.
Like Bing Crosby or
something?
Yeah,
something like that. He was crooning, wow. Yeah.
So already he was getting the new ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to break form.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And that can either be real good or real career ending. In this case, it was real good. So then came Trio Imperial, right?
Right.
And that was like a good – that was after the war. The first ones were pre-war.
Yes.
The war sort of intervened his life, right?
Uh-huh. Right.
And how do you hook up with – Imperial Records of all. Of course, this is well before Fats Domino or Ricky Nelson or any of these people.
That's right. This is an amazing story that I didn't hear until like maybe 5 years before he passed. I didn't know this, and it's just like my dad because, you know, he just was. He didn't, he was not a very good businessman. He did not pursue things. He just kind of did his thing and things came to him. And this story just blows my mind because when he got to L.A. in 1939, he was walking down the street, and he was dressed very Tucson, Arizona, a little bit cowboyish. He had like a cowboy belt and certain kind of jeans, certain kind of boots. He's walking down the street, and this other guy's walking the opposite way, and he stops him, and he says, "Are you from Sonora, or are you from Tucson?" He goes, "Yeah." Introduced himself, turned out to be he. And then the guy says, "Are you a musician?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Do you write songs?" "Yeah." He goes, "I'd like to hear some of your songs." Took him into Vocalion, listened to his stuff. Next thing you know, he's recording, and it turned out to be Manuel Acuña, who was his producer for his whole life. He met him on the street.
based on the way he was dressed.
Yeah.
Here comes Tucson.
Right. Yeah, right. People are always pursuing their career and auditioning and agents, and he's like walking down the street. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just like.
Okay, so Acuna had a relationship with Imperial Records? And
He was working for Vocalion, and that's how my dad got that deal. Yeah. And then he took my dad to Imperial.
Okay, now, Imperial was an active label at the time. I was wondering. Was the trio named after the label?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So the label didn't. Okay.
And I think it was only in Spanish, the label, at that time. They hadn't gone English yet.
Well, I think they were like a folk label and did.
Oh, folk first?
Well, I think they did like foreign language records. Oh. And they had a series for each. I'm pretty sure they had like some other European languages, and I'm not sure if it was like Polka Records or but they were doing Dixie. They were doing, it was like a Heinz 57 of styles, and they had a series for each of these subgenres, if you will. So, you know, and then they broke through with Boogie Woogie. They did some Boogie Woogie singles, and then they went to New Orleans, and then Lou Chud.
Yeah, Fats. And
yeah, Smiley Lewis and all those people. But this is well before that. This is like 47 through 49, something like that. Or maybe 49 through early 50s. Did your dad remember when Lou Chud signed Fats?
No, he doesn't, but it was afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
But I also want to mention that my dad did about 100 or so tracks with the Trio Imperial, and then he went solo with Imperial, and he did about 200 titles as a solo.
Does Capitol have all those tapes?
Yeah, they do. They don't know they have it. They don't care that they have it. They do nothing with it.
They could put out the ultimate box set.
Yeah, but they don't care.
If it was marketed properly.
We met with them in the late 90s, and they just gave us a runaround. They didn't give a hell.
Well, you know, Billy Vera does a lot of... You know Billy, don't you?
I've never met him. But I know who he is.
He does a lot of consulting with a lot of different labels, and I know that I have some of the original singles that Billy just would love to have, like your dad's version of "Oh Babe."
Mm-hmm.
You know the one I'm talking
about? Yeah,
that
was a Chicas Patas Boogie.
Yeah, exactly. Da, da, da. Yeah, and I've never been able to figure out what Cheetah's, I guess it's Dancing Feet, right?
Chicas Patas. Yeah, but it, like, probably literally, but it was slang for really cool, far out, you know.
Oh, okay. Cool, far out boogie. But I know Billy, you know, when he found out I had those records, we had a lot of conversations. But I should contact him and see if he can.
So he knew about my dad?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Excuse me.
But we digress.
Huh?
But we digress.
That's what the whole show's about. Are you kidding me? Okay. Muy Sabroso. Tell me about that.
Oh, I love this. This just shows you my dad's versatility. You know, here, of course, he was recording rancheras and every style of, you know, boleros and all kinds of genres in Mexican music. But he would also throw in blues, boogie-woogie, and this was a blues. And, it, I mean, it's so, you know, the track sounds like it might be backing up Billie Holiday, you know, the kind of playing and the style of the music. And it's a blues called Muy Sabroso Blues, meaning very tasty blues.
Yeah. Okay.
Yo tengo una novia que sabe querer. Cuando me besa yo no sé qué hacer. Me siento muy sabroso. Me siento muy sabroso. Sé lo que siento cuando mi baby me besa así. Me da mi abracito y me da mi apretón y luego un besito y rom pom pom pom. Qué lindo besa mi baby. Qué lindo besa mi baby. Cuando me besa mi baby desmayar.
a temblar. Me dice mi baby, arrejúntate más. Yo me voy al cielo.
Me voy al cielo.
Y yo me voy al cielo. Yo no me quedo aquí. Sala sobre el sillón, baja las luces y mi corazón me suena pom pom pom,
pom pom pom,
me suena pom pom pom,
pom pom pom.
Qué lindo besa mi bebé, esa sí sabe besar.
Lots of horns and some pretty impressive drumming.
And clarinet solo.
And clarinet, yeah. And he always throws in like a phrase and
rum pom pom.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's saying he's the girl's kissing him and his heart's going boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, so, some real strong hook, just a you know hippity hop and the Chattanooga choo choo, boom, boom, boom. He was always looking for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the always active mind of Lalo Guerrero, this is real historical stuff, and I appreciate you sharing this with the audience during this particular broadcast. Muy sabroso, real cool.
Yeah,
real cool.
And I'm glad you brought this. You know, your audience should know that. You know, you specifically said you know bring stuff that you don't normally hear, and that's
yeah.
what we did.
Oh, man,
because you know everybody hears Chuco Suaves and Chicas Patas, and
not everybody or marijuana. Well,
and the songs that are in Zoot Suit, you know,
Pound
Vamos
Dog.
A Bailar,
and then Pound Dog, some of the big hits, Elvis
yeah.
Paris.
But
like
these
that.
Are a little less played,
yeah.
but they're great.
Man. Yeah, because they represent an era, they represent a time, they represent a cultural, you know. What was going on at the time in L.A.? You know,
yeah.
I mean, you can picture the dance halls and the way people were dressing and acting and everything else.
Yeah.
It's really very. I don't want to use the word profound, but
it is.
Okay, I'll accept that. Okay, so you, your dad had already established himself real well by the mid 1960s. I mean, he'd had hits in the 50s. He had Mickey Mouse. What was it, Mickey
Mambo.
Mouse Mambo and Pound Dog and
Pancho Lopez.
I mean, he was sort of becoming the Stan Freberg of.
Well, that was the thing. That was one little part of him. You know, he did everything. That was so amazing.
Yeah, but that was a.
He could do parodies.
Yeah, sales wise, that really didn't hurt, did it?
No.
So he established his own record company. When and under what circuit? That was Manuel Acuña again.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It was actually, Manuel was a businessman, and my dad and he were partners. Actually, their first label was Real Records, Real.
Mm-hmm.
And they chose Real because it was English and Spanish.
Right.
Real, Real.
Right.
And that was their first label. Then they did Colonial in the early 60s.
You know, those labels are assumed to be like some of the Mexico-based labels, but they're really not. But they have that graphic, you know. And there was Real records are not that easy to find. Neither are Colonials, for that matter. I'm an active record collector, and I go to the record shows and like that. And now and again, I come across one. But these, except for the hits, some of the stuff is like, you know.
I got a ton of them. Tons.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Got any extras?
Yeah, I do.
Want to sell some?
Oh, I'll give you a couple.
Yeah. Okay.
If you're nice to me.
Yeah. Okay. How am I doing so far?
You're doing great.
Oh, okay. Good. So in 65, he gets this, I guess you were still in high school, this high school kid to back him up, huh?
Yeah.
Felipe El Hippie. Let's talk about that.
Oh,
song.
My God. Actually, well, okay, we'll play this first. This was actually done after, I guess, the next one you're going to play.
Well, you tell me which one.
Well,
yeah,
why don't you play Minifalda?
Okay.
This is a really great story, too, because, again, my dad was so groundbreaking and innovative. This song was 1965, went during the miniskirt craze, so he wrote this song, The Miniskirt of Reinalda, La Minifalda de Reinalda. And what was unique about it was half of it is norteño accordion Tex-Mex style, and half of it is rock and roll. So he literally had an accordion Tex-Mex band in the studio and my band, Mark and the Escorts, set up side by side, and he would sing and play with that group, and they'd stop and we'd start, and then back and forth. So two bands, there was no overdubbing, no tricks. We were actually doing it live. One band would stop, and then what linked it together, as you'll hear, the Tex-Mex music stops, and then I play a guitar solo on a 12-string Rickenbacker that I had at the time. I was 15 or 16 years old. I do the solo, and boom, then the rock band comes in, and my dad goes rock. Then it goes right smoothly back into the accordion and the Tex-Mex and back into the rock and roll.
He did the same thing with Pound Dog, too.
He did that, too?
Yeah. Oh. It was two separate bands, a black band and a Mexican band.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, he told me that story. And
are you sure? I'm not sure about Pound Dog. I'm really not.
Yeah, yeah, because he changes the style completely mid-record.
Really?
Just like this.
Because I thought Pound Dog was like Hound Dog, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay. Or are you thinking of Elvis Pettis?
It could be Elvis
Pettis.
Yeah,
you're thinking of Elvis Pettis.
Okay, but he did the, you know.
Yeah, there was both styles in that, yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, so this was cool. I think this was the first time he did that, as I recall, but... it came out fantastic, and you'll hear it right now. And it was very successful. It sold very well. And then it was recorded by a couple of groups in Mexico, and it was a huge hit in Mexico for these other groups.
Mia Falda.
La Mini Falda de Reynalda.
Okay.
That's not it. That's not it. I don't know if you want to stop this or not.
Okay, I'm bringing back. All right, yeah, I see.
You put another CD in, didn't you? That's another CD.
You know, you're right.
It's another CD.
You know more about what I'm doing.
Yes,
than
I got to watch you.
Yeah.
That was my.
Con esa moda de las minifaldas no deja nada a la imaginación, pues si se agachan se les mira hasta la espalda. Tengo una novia que se llama Reinalda, también se pone ya a su minifalda, y cuando pasa, compadre del alma, le juro que hasta la lengua se me escalda. Así. Reinalda, Reinalda, quítate tu minifalda, cuando bailas el gogó, y se te mira hasta la espalda. Pero Reinalda, Reinalda, ya quítate tu minifalda, cuando bailas el gogó, gogó, hasta la lengua se me escalda. De las minifaldas es un problema poderse agachar. Para levantar algún objeto se sientan como helicóptero al aterrizar. Como te quiero, mi linda Reinalda, tienes los ojos color de esmeralda, y cuando te pones tu minifalda, pues quién te mira los ojos, Reinalda. Le canto así. Reinalda, Reinalda, ya quítate tu minifalda, cuando bailas a cocó, y se te mira hasta la espalda. Pero Reinalda, Reinalda, ya quítate tu minifalda.
The other part of that is the way he sings the song
oh,
matches
Yes.
Exactly. He goes from polka to rock and back to polka.
And singing his butt off.
Yeah, well, okay.
And by the way, the polka group was Los Hermanos Arellano, a really good group.
So what did they think about being side by side with the rock band?
I don't know. We got along great. We wound up doing more sessions. Like I said, that was so successful, we did a sequel, which was that Felipe El Hippie. We did the same thing.
Okay. This doo-wop, I'm having fun with your handwriting. It's like
I did that for my benefit.
What's this first?
Hieroglyphics.
Corazon.
Ven Corazon.
Ven Corazon.
Come My Heart or something like that.
Oh, okay. Now,
this one's really obscure. People don't know this one.
And you describe it as a
doo-wop. It's sort of doo-wop-y, and I believe it might have even been Imperial or the very, very beginning of his own labels.
Okay, well, maybe we could figure it out by listening to it, try to put it in what time frame.
Yeah. That's not it.
Okay, this is a challenge. 7. This is the 45 show. Yeah, right.
Ven, corazón, deja darte mi amor en un beso que no
Want to hear what I heard?
What did you hear?
I heard it's like the Platters doing You'll Never Walk Alone.
Yeah. So that was definitely, what would you say, mid-50s kind of
Yeah, with the hiccuping
vibe
and everything. Yeah.
Sort of thing. So that definitely was not Imperial. I'm sure it was. Could have been one of the other labels.
Yeah, Rael or Colonial, huh?
Something like that.
Yeah, okay.
Great song that he wrote
too. Oh, man, I'll tell you something. So we're tracing the career of Lalo Guerrero through the 40s into the 50s and 60s when he brought his son, Mark Guerrero, our guest here today. How many kids did your dad have?
Two that we know of.
Okay.
My brother and I, and then there could be some scattered about the country. We're not sure.
And your brother's in TV production, or was at one time? Or?
Yeah, he still does some of that and some live shows. He has a one-man show right now as well. He's pretty busy.
So entertainment was always like a big focus.
Yeah, and my brother is a very much a ham like my dad. He used to do theater and, dancing, singing, acting.
Now, did you have any career other than music throughout your life, or is that?
No, I've made my living with music the whole time.
And you've had a lot of different involvements, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that, and we can hear you with one more. What would you want me to play from this?
From the Lalo thing?
Yeah.
Which one? What do you have left?
Oh, God. I got Los... What is it?
Greñudos. Yes, play that.
Which one?
Los Greñudos, the long hairs.
Okay.
In 1965, my dad wrote this song about the long hairs, you know. It was pre-hippie. I don't think the word hippie had even come out, but the Beatles had sort of revolutionized having long hair. So he wrote a song about long-haired kids, and he brought in my band, Mark and the Escorts, and we were about 15 years old. And it's really a cool-sounding record. A friend of mine described it. It sounds like my dad's being backed up by Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, you know. It's got that kind of thing, and he's singing his butt off, and he wrote this song as well.
So he was amused by cultural shifts, wasn't he? I mean,
oh, yeah, he followed what was going on always.
Yeah, it was like a platform for him, right? I mean, I'm sure he looked for – he would have loved everything. Well, of course, how long has it been since he's passed away? About 5 years?
Yeah.
I'm sure every – thing that took the public's fancy, he probably had a song about it.
Yeah, I used to joke that he left no stone unturned.
Most older people resist change.
He loved exactly. It. Yeah, that's what kept him going, because he always moved along with the times. And he loved the Beatles. He loved Chuck Berry. He loved Elvis.
Oh, man. I mean, how many dads are like that?
Not too many.
Yeah, okay. That, of course, for every positive, there's always a downside, too. But
always.
Always.
What's your,
do you want to talk about it? Or?
Well, in what sense?
Right. I don't know. You live the life. Let's play this and then.
Okay, then we'll talk about
we'll
that.
Fill in the blanks.
We'll talk about Daddy Dearest.
No, I don't have to.
No.
Ahora sí que regaron el engrudo con esa nueva moda de andar todos greñudos. Hasta los hombros se lo dejan crecer, ya casi ni se sabe el que es macho o es mujer. Pues verán que la otra noche, caminando por la calle, por detrás yo divisé, pero muy bonito talle, pantaloncito ajustado y un saquito muy cortito. Su pelo largo ondulado, yo lo seguí cual corderito. Me acerqué poquito a poco y ya estaba por darle un beso, cuando le salió una voz de barítono muy grueso. Ay, ¿qué te pasa que estás loco?, me dijo, y yo sentí gran desconsuelo. Le dije, no chiquito, anda vete a hacer el pelo. Que no ves que te pueden confundir con uno de esos raros que luego andan por allí, y un accidente te puede suceder por andar con el pelo igual que una mujer. A los virus desde moda del greñero, y los que la están pagando son los pobres peluqueros.
Wow. Yeah, like you say, Sam the Sham or whatever hard rock.
And you can hear some British Invasion in there.
Oh, sure, a little bit of Stones or Yardbirds or whatever.
Yeah.
So did you dub these off of original 45s or did you have...
Oh, yeah, I did originally. Yeah.
So have you put your dad's life on CD?
Well, I have everything on CD,
wow.
That I have that I can get my hands on.
So how many CDs? How many?
I have like about maybe 16 CDs of like 90 minutes each, or 80 minutes each. So
from the 78s clear through
Nice
going.
I bet I have at least 90% of what he did.
Nice going.
At least.
Nice going. Why don't you, why don't you put out your own?
Well, my brother and I are thinking about it. You know, we don't technically we don't own all of it. We own this Colonial stuff.
Uh-huh.
And those have been licensed to a couple of people.
Uh-huh. So you know the business.
Well, to a degree.
Yeah. Okay. Your dad didn't teach you the business. He taught you entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not the greatest businessman myself either.
Okay. Okay. I don't want to go on record saying bootleg the stuff, but
bootleg the stuff. You know, probably should.
Nobody else is doing it.
They don't give a damn about it anyway, some of these companies.
I mean, I know some people that.
They would do it.
Yeah.
In a dark alley, we'll meet them.
No, they're in the East Coast, so they have their own. I mean, I can give you a few names. There might be some.
Louis the Finger and.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know how close you are. Okay, in fact, one of them's listening right now because I'll show you some of the CDs later on. Okay, okay, so let's. I want to do this Fat Man, and I'm going to go out with one of your instrumentals because we're winding up this particular hour. But, you know, here's your dad. He's out there in the public arena, the public eye. He's super popular in a limited audience, but super popular. That does have to have an effect on the home life, right?
Oh, what do you mean when I was younger?
Yeah.
To a degree, yeah. It was, again, like you say, it wasn't like a national thing. But you know, in our world, he was really, really famous. And so it was kind of weird being the son of a famous guy.
Where were you living at the time?
East L.A., right there by Garfield High School. You know, we were living in a, you know, middle class to lower middle class.
What street?
Probably middle class. McDonald Avenue, between, you know, 3rd Street and Whittier Boulevard. So, but, you know, it was, so I didn't used to talk about it a lot. And when Mark and the Escorts got popular, I would never sort of mention it. And I didn't want people to say, you know, Lalo's son. And whenever they did put it on the flyer, I'd be mortified, you know, because I didn't want to use his name. And I didn't want to feel different, you know.
Yeah, but now you understand the historical.
Oh, yeah. You know, I embraced him. I was always proud of him, but I embraced the thing because, you know, there's no avoiding it. And we are one in a sense.
Well, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to go out with, I think I already played that. Oh, yeah, here we go. It's the Fat Man having nothing to do with Fats Domino.
No. It's just a song he wrote saying, I am el hombre gordo, I'm the Fat Man, and it's bluesy.
So he was the original Fat Man on Imperial.
I guess so. That's right.
Okay, there's your title for your CD.
Thank you. The original.
Mi vieja no me quiere, me va a divorciar. La tumbo de la cama cuando me voy a acostar. Yo soy el hombre gordo. Yo soy el hombre gordo. Si peso 300 libras, ¿qué le voy a hacer? En la esquina esperar un camión y al fin cuando llega me dice el conductor usted está muy gordo, usted está muy gordo y si lo subo me quiebra usted el motor. Conmigo las muchachas se quieren casar, porque en el invierno yo las voy a calentar. Yo soy el hombre gordo, yo soy el hombre gordo. Si peso 300 libras, ¿qué le voy a hacer? Thank you. en una dieta y no puedo aguantar, porque me gustan mucho los frijoles sin guisar. Yo soy el hombre gordo, yo soy el hombre gordo. Si peso 300 libras, ¿qué le voy a hacer?
This certainly is tough stuff. Mark and the Escorts, Mark Guerrero, son of Lalo Guerrero, and this overview, I'm going to thank Mark for coming in. Thanks for coming in, Mark.
My pleasure. It's a lot of fun.
Overview of the musical styles and some of the personal details in the life of Lalo Guerrero.
I got more, too.
Okay. You're listening to the Steve Probst 45 Show out of the studios of WPMD, Cerritos College, Norwalk, California, around the world on rocketradio.net.